Hey guys, I'm Adam Rappaport, and this is the Bon Appetit Foodcast. We're about halfway through summer, aka halfway through the best time of year to cook. Days go on forever, the produce is peak. And bonus, we've got Carla Lally Music and our friend Gabe T back on to talk about what they're cooking this summer. And we will also be answering some listener questions. So thanks to all of you who filled up our inbox. We'll get to as many of them as we can. FYI, there are a couple of curse words that slipped out in this episode, so save it for later if you're listening with the kids. And now, let's do this. Carl, are you ready?
Yeah.
What are we talking about today?
Soup's ready.
We're talking about summer because today, right now, as we record this, it is July 16th. We were originally going to call this podcast like Peak Summer Podcast, but It's not even midsummer yet.
Summer is officially over.
Yeah,
July 16th.
What I said.
It's a wrap.
It is literally over. The thing about where we are in July now is that the longest day already happened.
Yeah.
But you know what that means? Mm. All of these days are shorter.
However, we still have tomatoes to look forward to. We still have like peak season corn to look forward to. There's a lot of good stuff that hasn't even hit us in the Northeast as of yet.
You know what happened to me about 2 weeks ago? We were at Bostwick's Chowder House on Route 27, as one does.
You're actually from Massachusetts. How would you pronounce that?
Chowder.
Bostwick's?
Bostwick's Chowder House. And my sister-in-law, Jill, who is a very awesome person. Shout out to Jill. We love Jill. She wanted to, you know, as usual, you have to wait 2 hours. You have too many Negronis while you're waiting. You're ravenous and kind of drunk. And
what kind of chowder house has Negronis?
It's the Hamptons, baby. It's how it goes. So, you know, we're all ordering our different clams and chowders and lobster rolls and blah, blah, blah. And she's like, and I'll have a piece of corn. And I'm like, don't do it. Don't get the corn.
Too early.
She's like, what do you mean? I'm like, it's too early. It's not local. She's like, she looks at me and she looked at me with laser beam shot out of her eyes. She's like, oh, it's not local. Okay, I won't get the corn.
Dude,
she like killed me. She'll actually never let me live that down.
I will say this. I hate to be like food snob guy, but this is a food podcast. I was at the IGA out on Long Island on Memorial Day weekend. So not even summer yet. Certainly not temperature wise. These like dudes and the girlfriends were like, all right, first of all, they're picking over the grocery store corn that I'm like, that corn is not even remotely from around here or in season. It's tiny. And then the guy's like, hey, babe, should we get a watermelon? I'm like, it's May 30th. What are you doing? It's like you can't rush summer. You got to let summer come to you.
Have you ever seen a s'more end cap? I mean...
Wait, what?
Yeah, totally. S'more end cap.
What does that mean?
Yep.
That's when you walk into the...
It's merchandising, Adam. It's retail.
Yeah, the end cap is like the big display at the end of the aisle, you know?
Oh, yes,
when it's one-stop shop. And like you just walk in.
Oh, and it's got everything you need.
Yeah,
the skewers.
It's like the s'mores with all the stuff, but then there's also flip-flops and styrofoam kind of like thingies, and it's all right there.
Yeah. S'mores end cap.
Wow. Okay, so today we're going to do a couple things. We're going to talk about what we've been cooking up or grilling or, you know, that sort of thing. And then we're going to take some listener questions. But first, Carl's busy writing down recipes for the listeners. Carl, what have you been cooking? I do want to know. And I followed some of it on Instagram and I have a question in particular. But I don't know if you want me to ask first or if you want to go first.
I'll tell you what I've been cooking first. Mm-hmm. There's been, I got to say, a lot of chicken. So much chicken already this
chicken
summer.
Time now.
I love chicken. And one of the things that has become a total family standard is not just chicken, but chicken and sausages.
Yeah.
So if anybody wants to grill chicken, then somebody else inevitably says, throw on a few sausages. And then we have chicken and sausages, which is like one of my favorite dinners.
It's a classic Italian vibration.
Is that
classic?
Is that what...
Or Italian American, I should
say. Yeah, I never can pronounce it, but is that what chicken Scarpariello?
Scarpiello?
I believe.
That's got like chicken and sausage together.
But that's
maybe
like
some
a
peppers.
Whole saucy pan
together,
sauce
yes.
thing. This is like a separate. Grilling, outdoor, you know, grilling and chilling situation. And the reason I've really leaned into it this year is because I've been talking about this for a little while, but the medium heat grilling has really become my like happy place.
Yeah.
And that's good for chicken, bone-in chicken,
and sausages.
Because if the sausage is too hot, then you get those geysers of fat.
Yeah, they just explode. Adam's got his hand up.
Hand up.
That's code for I'm not interrupting, and yet
I'm interrupting.
I totally am.
Well, yes, but Emma's been telling me that a lot of listeners have been angry that I've been talking over people, and I'm just and I'm trying to explain. I'm like, that's just what I do in regular life.
Now,
I'm sorry.
They're angry.
They've been angry, but I'm just like, it's not like a podcast thing. It's just a regular life thing, and this is a pretty real life pod. Oh, so I was grilling this weekend, Carla, and we had a bunch of friends over, and there was kids, and it was that whole situation. I'm like, well, we'll get hot dogs and hamburgers for the kids, and then we'll get something nicer for the parents. And
yeah,
yada,
I heard you had a lot of people over.
Yeah,
that's what I heard.
That's what. Yeah.
Did you get a?
No, I heard it was nice.
No, we let Gabe know that it was happening, but we didn't actually invite him. Anyways,
because I don't have a car.
Okay. Anyways, I was at the market, but you're buying all the stuff, the ground beef, this, all that stuff, and you're like, oh, there's like one of those parsley and cheese sausage wheels.
Love a wheel.
And I threw that on the grill after we got the kids fed, but before the adults were ready to eat, and just like, and it's really, they're really thin. They're probably like half inch in diameter. The coil grills up like in 7 minutes, put it on a cutting board, just chop it up. A blob of Dijon mustard on the side.
Sick.
And you're just taking those little, you're just swabbing it Too through the good.
Dijon. Does it come with the heavy duty toothpick?
Yeah, you gotta take those out.
That
Two
comes
ways.
Out.
But yeah. You grill it with that.
You grill it with, so it stays together, and then you got to remember to pull it out, because as I learned, as you're trying to cut it, you're like, why isn't this cutting?
Right.
Because there's a big skewer in there.
I love a parsley and cheese sausage.
Sausage is like a kind
spiral.
Of a good sausage is an easy go-to. You've got barbecue kind of instantly. You don't have to. It's kind of a set and forget.
And
not really, but it's easier than doing a steak and getting it perfect. Yeah. Or
it's internally seasoned.
Raising my hand this time. Also, Carla, what I liked about the wheel, the narrow sausage, you know it's going to cook all the way through.
Right.
So you can do it pretty quickly, and you're like, it's good and it's juicy. Whereas with the bigger Italian sausages, if I put them on uncooked, completely uncooked, I typically end up overcooking them because I'm worried, oh, it's not done yet.
I think it's hard to overcook.
No, they get crumbly and dry.
If they have the right amount of fat content, you'd have a hard time overcooking
it. I'm still mastering the, like, not overcooking the sausage because of that same thing. You don't want it too pink in the middle.
Yeah.
But if you go too hot, then you're going to have like blackage and splitting. And then the low and slow with a lot of like rolling it over and rolling it back over. I really, really enjoy it. And then getting a few different varieties. The meat hook. Now,
incredible.
They have packaged sausages.
Incredible.
Did you know that? They're on Fresh Direct and Food Kick.
So good.
Can Very
people,
exciting.
So the meat hook is a great butcher in Brooklyn. Can people outside of New York get them? Or
no
is it,
idea.
No?
In fact, that's going to factor into my grilling story from the summer.
Okay.
But I digress.
All right. So their cheeseburger sausage. So good. Carl, I'm curious. You mentioned chicken. How are you preparing this chicken typically?
I like a bone-in thigh, but I also love wings. And then, you know, a properly cooked chicken breast that still has the rib cage on the back of it, so it's not fully... I like it all the ways, but if I had to choose one thing of grilled chicken to grill forever, it would be skin on bone-in thighs.
Yeah.
Seasoned or what
so
are you doing?
So this weekend I didn't have a ton of time. I just did the old salt and pepper and figured, you know, I had a lot of flavorful. I had hot Italian sausage. I had a Serrano cheddar sausage. I had like a lot going on in the sausage department. So I made a salsa verde and kind of did like a sauce for after.
Nice.
So, but if I had had my druthers, what I wanted to do was make a paste of grated garlic, grated ginger, grated lemongrass. I was going to get all those things together, a little olive oil, and then I was going to just put that all over the chicken, because that's another thing that's nice about the medium.
Yeah.
Cooking, like you can do a paste like that that could potentially burn if you were going too hot and fast.
Wow. Yep.
But it'll get like toasty and it'll get delicious and then rendery.
That's good. You know how else I like to do it that
Tell me.
I've done a few times with the leek type characters of the world is just take that whole chicken, whack that bad boy in half so you have all of that surface area, sort of flatten out those two halves and just do them that way and then attack them with a large cleaver when you're done.
Sure.
Let's whack it up.
Classic butterfly chicken.
Yeah, butterfly it up, two halves, grill them up real nice, and then a large cutting board, and it's so satisfying to just destroy them with a
You need
a
one
large
of those good Chinese cleavers.
Yeah, I've got one. I've got like three of them.
You know what? I haven't done it in a while.
Would.
Yeah.
But I love Jenny Rosenstrack's blog, Dinner a Love Story. She has that sort of that Indian-ish recipe, shout out to Priya, where it's just kind of like yogurt, ginger, maybe there's some turmeric in there, but you sort of slather like the boneless chicken thighs with that sort of stuff, and then you grill it. But again, if you grill it over high heat, then the yogurt and everything kind of burns. But otherwise, that yogurt marinade tenderizer.
And you do that
tangy.
On a skin-on chicken? See, I feel like the yogurt's getting in my way.
Boneless chicken thighs.
Boneless, skinless. Yeah.
It's boneless,
skinless. The best grilled chicken that's going right now in Brooklyn that you can actually get is that from that place, Chick's. In the DeKalb Market.
Yeah.
Chick's Isan.
I like that place.
Yeah.
The grilled chicken is out of this world.
It's crazy. I don't know what he does to it. It's like a marinade and it's a 3-day situation. I don't know what he's doing. It's insane.
We should get the recipe.
Yes.
So, Carlos, you got like the mixed grill going. So, you got the chicken, the sausage. Both are cooking over the same type of heat. So, it's convenient that way. They can get done at more or less the same time.
Yeah.
Put it on a big platter, or how are you serving this?
Yeah, big platter. Like sometimes the rim sheet. Tray that I bring out to the grill. That's how it was, just my sister and her husband and my husband, and you know, I didn't have to get all fancy with a platter.
No. Any favorite sides this summer so far?
Besides the salsa verde that I made?
Can I mention one?
Please do.
On your Instagram at Lolly Music. This gorgeous savory melon salad.
Oh, yeah. Mm.
With these chunks of just like buttery ripe cantaloupe sprinkled with like Aleppo pepper. There's some fresh basil torn out. Speckled? I don't know.
You said schmickled.
Olive oil, sea salt on this. That's not your sister's plate, is it?
It's a Heath platter.
Can I see the gram?
The plate is kind of bluish. Ooh. The melon's so orange. You've got the green basil and you can just like taste it.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. Savory summer melon salad. Page 88 of my book.
Killer, I'm doing that. But what's the next thing?
But
I'm doing?
It has a little fish sauce. It's fish sauce. Okay. So the dressing is just fish sauce, lime juice, salt, olive oil, a little MSG.
Yeah.
And torn herbs.
Herbs. But I would say with that recipe,
I'm making this.
What I like about this,
it works really well.
Yeah.
It's sweet but savory. Melon's funny. It's a funky.
I'm into that. I'm making that. But I'm going to blow minds with that, I think.
But I think what's cool about this is, and I love when we do this sort of thing in the magazine, it's as much of a idea as it is a recipe.
Right.
Like if you don't have fish sauce, fine. If, you know, add a little soy, whatever you want to do. But it's the notion of like take really ripe melon and make it into a savory, quote unquote, salad.
Totally.
And yeah, you can, whether it's lime juice or this, or you could use fresh mint,
MSG that you have in your pantry and just sprinkle it all the way. You
know what I mean? I could have used fresh mint instead of basil.
Totally. And you could use watermelon if you didn't have cantaloupe, or if you're a honeydew person, or
I could do some cilantro.
You could do some, I thought you were going to say I could do some salami. I was like, sure.
Sure.
That's actually
not a bad idea. Salty, because that's like salt, prosciutto, and melon.
Right. There you go. You could do.
No, I'm not doing it.
Okay.
I'm going to do it right the way it is.
Cool.
So anyways, I saw that
cold
photo.
Melon. The melon has to be cold.
Oh,
it's key.
Yes.
Very key.
And ripe.
Yes.
Like when you buy the melon at the market and you can smell it before you even cut into it. And it's kind of soft at the top of the cantaloupe.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh.
Webbing. I learned a thing about the webbing. You know how like on a cantaloupe or honeydew, it has that webbing on the outside?
Yeah.
So there's the raised part, but then there's the surface part. So like look past the raised to the surface, and that should be not very green. Like if it's a cantaloupe, it should be white or orangey patches.
Green says it's still not ripe?
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Isn't that a cool tip?
Yeah, weird.
Gabe, you've been... are we talking about your Thai grill out the other night? What are we talking about?
Yeah, man. I mean, I haven't had the opportunity to do too much grilling this summer. It hasn't been that kind of a summer, but we did have a nice long week in Amagansett at the beach with a large Weber, and my theme was Thai grilling, because nothing loves salty grilled meats like a fish saucy, limey, extremely spicy hot chili dipping sauce with the added special ingredient that they put is the toasted rice powder.
Oh, I go crazy for it.
Which changes
literally go crazy
the game.
For it.
Yeah, it changes
I can't
the game.
Talk about it.
It changes the game. So the night market cookbook, which you guys did a nice event here at BA.
Yes, shout out to Chris.
He's great.
Who made perhaps the best fried chicken sandwiches ever in the history of ever.
Yeah, with the flavor profiles in his book, you kind of can't miss if you just follow the and it's really gratifying. So the one thing I did was I actually went to Meat Hook. They make a Thai sausage there.
Yes,
and,
I had
Isan
it.
Isan sausage that's really got good. Lemongrass and lots of herbs and it's an incredible sausage. Just as you would have that kind of sausage is part of I think Northern Thai cuisine. So Not having been to Thailand, disclaimer, but this is what I understand. So I made a couple of recipes from that book, including a pork toro, which is a like a cured jowl that is marinated and brushed with a mix of soy sauces, and it caramelizes on the grill. It's a really fatty piece of meat, but it has a it has in and of itself sort of a smoky flavor. So you get kind of a bacony situation, and you do it in sort of long strips, and into that dipping sauce, it makes people crazy.
Really?
Yeah, and you can execute it just like the restaurant. If you can go to somebody and say, "Hey, do you happen to have a pig head lying around? Would you mind cutting those jowls out for me?" which they will do.
But you're doing the curing process.
Yeah, it's a simple cure. Yeah. It's like a brine.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a simple brine, salt and sugar brine, with white pepper, and I did that alongside the sausages with heaps with big bowls of incredibly fire crazy spicy dipping sauce.
Yum.
And then I did the crispy rice salad. The crispy rice salad is a multi step. That's one of the signature dishes in the restaurant. It's incredibly addictive. It's incredibly hot, spicy, sour, umami, but there's like a sour thing, and I don't even know how the combination of these ingredients creates this flavor profile, but it is insane. You have to take rice, Adam. You have to dry it out.
Oh yes.
Then you have to take curry. You have to make a curry powder, curry
paste.
Massage every grain of rice. You have to make 3 cups of cooked rice, which is a three cups of raw rice, which is a lot of cooked rice. Massage every grain and then deep fry the rice.
Oh my god!
And then pull it out and then mix that into a salad with a dressing with all these crazy ingredients. But people go crazy for it. I'm telling you.
Not that.
Not. Kind of unlike the squirrel, Jessica Kozlow's.
Yeah, that fried, but that was very herby. It didn't have a ton of these kinds of sweet, sour, spicy, all this stuff.
Hers has like shaved cauliflower and a lot of fresh
more
herbs.
On the healthy tip, but the texture.
Yeah.
Similar.
The texture is unbelievable, and it is very herby. Like you crush it at the end with a ton of lime, a ton of fish sauce, a ton of herbs, a ton of cilantro, onions, like 4 different kinds of onions. You know, just boom, boom, boom.
Sounds incredible.
Yeah. Gabe, let me ask you a question.
Peanuts.
Yes. How many beers did you have over the course of this feast?
We had a bunch of beers. We were drinking Modelo's, great beach beer.
Love the beer.
And we were drinking some natty wines. We were drinking some natty wines, which you get at the restaurant.
Yeah, if you go to Night Market, Chris has a great natural wine.
Some really chuggable, crushable, ice cold, out of the cooler, big jugs, mags only, Adam. It's a mag summer.
Mags
only. Hashtag mags only.
We need to get that tattoo. Mag summer. Mag summer 19.
Yeah, mag summer.
Okay.
That's it.
I like that. Can I talk about my grilled paella?
Absolutely.
Which I feel like I've been talking about a lot for the last several years, but we've never talked about it on the pod.
Is that true?
Yeah, weirdly enough.
Amazing.
I talk about everything else. Explain your back. You built a...
Yeah, if you work for the FDNY, just shut the radio off now. Okay, cool. Those people
or
are
Or you
gone.
Can come on over and or Carla just come will make over. You chicken and sausage.
Yeah, so we have... it's like a... big outdoor fireplace is how I would describe it.
Yeah.
It's like a hearth that has fire bricks in the bottom. It's like 4 foot by 3 foot. So nice kind of big rectangle. And then it has a dome over it, but it's an arch. It's not an actual dome like a pizza dome. And then it's open in the front.
What do you call it?
Outdoor fireplace. Yeah. It's like a hearth.
And a
if
grill.
I'm being fancy.
And
then it's, we're right. So inside of it, I have like a real hodgepodge of fire bricks and cast iron pans and oven racks that I've turned into grill grates. Like a whole situation in there.
Yeah, I had the pleasure of going to one of the parties at your house, having been invited. Adam
was invited.
Having been invited. And it was fantastic. It's amazing when you invite people and they come. And it's delicious.
Anyways, back to the paella. So I do not have an outdoor fireplace, but I do have a Weber out on Long Island. And I have someone gave me a Le Creuset paella pan years ago, like, when am I ever going to use this? And all of a sudden, like, oh. And so it's that more heavyweight sort of Le Creuset
and does
material.
It just live at the beach? Like, does it just kind of live out there?
Yeah, basically. Yeah. So it's, as you know, not a huge seafood guide, but paella is like, it's fun to make in that it's interactive and it's actually, I find it not hard. So here's what, I'm just going to run through some steps and jump in when you want to.
Tell us how to do
it. So, whatever. I'm just telling you how I do it. I'm not at all authority. I've never, hey, disclaimer, never been to Spain.
Do you?
Huge.
Do you use the Canal House? We had a Canal House grilled paella recipe.
That one had lobster in it, didn't it?
It did. Yeah, it was like lobster and peas maybe, but it, as just a kind of ratio, like when I'm going to do something like that, it's like, how much rice? How much liquid are we talking about? Like how much protein by weight?
It's like a, you know, the pan's about probably 16 inches wide or so, maybe a little wider. What I do, so I live fire, charcoal, put the grate on, and then I take three like brick-sized rocks and put them on the top of the grate because I want to prop the round pan a bit higher over the fire because when you first put it on, that coals are still pretty hot. So to that, I'll throw a bunch of like pancetta in there, a little olive oil, and like one minced up onion. Mm. Let that all get all simmering so the pancetta gets crispy or whatever pork product you got. Onion starts to get translucent. And then rice-wise, I mean, I know you're supposed to use the bamba rice if you can find it. I've used, last time I think I just used arborio, like risotto rice. And you just kind of pour it into the pan till it coats the pan, but it doesn't need to be like thick piled in there, but just enough to cover what's in there. Stir it up a little bit. And then I learned this from Eric Repair. He's a chef at this restaurant called Le Bernardin.
Heard of it.
Yeah. I think a big key to the success of good paella is a depth of flavor that you get through the stocks. So he used fish stock, chicken stock. I think he might have even had some squid stock or something in there. And then the sort of the juice from a canned tomatoes. You know what I mean? So you get the tomatoes, you press the top down and just strain out all that nice amber red juice. So you just start, I just start swirling that in as it starts to cook, and about halfway through, so I was gonna do, and so that the rice absorbs all that flavor, I bought some little night clams, bought some like fluke that I just sliced up into like inch long pieces, bought some shrimp, like two dozen shrimp, little like, kind of medium sized, and then I would just, you start with the clams because they take a while and you just never know how long they're gonna take. So you sort of nestle them in there in a concentric circle, sort of facing upwards.
Yeah, you did a very geometric, like all the clams were facing the same way.
Yeah, so you face them up. I don't know. And it's, but you know what I had to realize,
like
though?
Like hinge down into the
heat. Yes, exactly. And, but what I realized, well, two things. So at some point, what I do is I pick up the pan, remove the rocks, and put it on the grill grate itself as the coals start to die down a little bit.
So the rocks are really like acting as a heat diffuser.
A buffer,
it's
yes.
It's just like too hot.
It would, I don't want the bottom to get burnt, so put it down, and then you're still adding some stock now and then if it's getting too dry. And then what I realized, though, at some point I had to put the Weber top on, grates open, because the clams can be very stingy.
Yeah,
they just were, at some point they're just not opening, so you're like, you know, I got to make that little oven, put the top on. But then
stingy or stubborn?
Stubborn, thank you. It's a difference. they weren't giving it up. That's stingy.
Yeah,
also
that is stingy.
Yeah, schmecken. And then
speckle.
And then when you're ready to sort of nestle in the pieces of fish and the shrimp, that takes like no time
chorizo?
At all.
Little chorizo?
Yeah, chorizo? No chorizo. He put pancetta.
Well, pancetta was in there already.
No, chorizo. Yeah,
no.
I like chorizo because I like the smoky.
Yeah, if you have chorizo, I would do that in the beginning with the onions, either way.
Was there paprika at anywhere involved?
You know what we've done?
You've done red peppers.
Saffron.
Pimenton.
Saffron.
Oh, saffron.
And so then you nestle in the fish, is so like the white fish and the shrimp cook in a few minutes.
Right.
And then to that, once those are almost done, you just pour in, I just had like
would
frozen.
Would you do scallops in there?
Oh, I did scallops. Yeah. I bought scallops. Nice. I forgot about that. I had gorgeous fresh bay scallops or whatever.
Beautiful.
And so I had the scallops nestled in there and then poured in the peas. Mm. I just use frozen peas. There's nothing wrong with frozen peas, are there?
No.
I don't think so.
Yeah, it was fine.
I don't even know where to get a fresh pea.
Yes.
Honestly.
So you pour those on top and then, like you said, if you just get the jarred red peppers, the pimenton or whatever you call those, and just slice them up and lay them on there, and then you just bring the whole thing to the table.
Herbs? Parsley?
Yes, I did parsley just because I had it. And
right.
That's okay, right?
I
don't know if that's authentic. You know what I did before, though?
Parsley.
What's even better is if you can get fresh snap peas and then you sort of chiffonade those and then you sort of shower that.
Because
they're a little crispy.
Any heat? Any chilies?
Paella is not a spicy thing.
It's more of a smoky.
Yeah, it's more smoky. Yeah, so the chorizo. And then you just bring
the whole
thing to the table and you can kind of fish around, get it in there. Like, oh, I want to get a couple of clams. I want the...
How is your socarrat?
Okay, so
a little herbs at the end? Like a little...
I said just some parsley.
Okay.
Yeah, explain socarrat.
Socarrat is the part of the rice that is almost burning, crisping at the bottom of the pan.
That's what we want.
So it's that crispy browned under layer.
That's the bit
and
we want.
That's
the best part.
It's kind of prized. Yeah. I mean, like they say, it's not paella if you don't have a sauerkraut.
Okay, well
it's
then,
kind of like
this
you know,
time,
challah without a braid. This, you know what I mean? Is it really challah?
Yeah. What's
this? This time, oh challah. Have you said challah? Challah. This time, then I did not make paella because for some reason
you didn't get the crispy.
And I think it was because I was feeding it so much stock that it stayed so moist, and by the time I put it down on the grates itself, the fire wasn't that hot anymore because I was afraid of it burning. And I've gotten in the past, but this time the rice was so damn flavorful. It was just every spoonful was great. The fish, everything, nothing was overcooked.
That was this weekend?
That was a couple weekends ago.
Mm. Were
so
there?
Good.
Nope.
No.
Weren't there.
No.
Can we back up a tiny bit about the stock being so important? Purchased? Box?
I had some good chicken
Can?
Stock.
What are we doing?
I had some good chicken stock from Eight Hands, which is like one of the farms out there.
No faux, baby.
So yeah, but there's a lot of good butchers. I'll go to Dixon's here in the city and get it. A lot of these good new school butchers.
Who gives you the good fish stock?
So fish stock was at Southhold Fish Market out there. So I bought a jar of that, pint
Acceptable,
of that.
Acceptable, right. Carla?
Oh, I think it's great. I mean, it sounds like somebody made it.
Yeah.
It wasn't you. And it didn't come
Not
with
from
like,
a can.
It
no.
wasn't in a, you know, box.
But typically, if you're lucky enough to live or have a house around a decent fish market, oftentimes a good fish market is going to have fish
stock.
Have it. And if you can go to a good butcher, always, especially like I said, places like the Meat Hook or Dixon's or Eight Hands, they're going to have socks.
They're not dummies. And they're not throwing bones out.
No, and I always, when I go to a good butcher like that, I always end up buying a pint or two of whatever stock they have and put it in the freezer. Cause like, that's what I did this time. I had it in there for a couple
Smart.
Months ago. So anyways, it was just delicious. It's fun to do. It's active without being complicated. You know, it's like a layered process.
Yeah. Have Emil and I talked about paella, Emma, on our rice content? I don't know if we've talked about paella.
Oh, you know, the
next
Maybe
rice that's what's there. We go. Next weekend.
Rice 5.0.
Rice 5.0. I know.
That's a good one.
You and Sam.
Yeah, maybe that's what we'll do next weekend.
Out there.
Yeah.
All right. Sam Cass, ladies and gentlemen, shout out. A lot of shout outs today. All right. So this all, I want Thai feast.
It's always the same. Yeah.
That sounds delicious.
Yeah.
Chicken and sausage. I just think that's like,
just
whenever
go
I go
wrong.
To the market, just buy some sausage.
Yeah, and you
can just
go,
have them.
Just have
literally,
them.
Literally, you said it is very Italian-American to have chicken and sausage, and that's like
with
my family.
Yeah, with the peppers.
But then What name a cuisine that isn't have a integral part of their cuisine and culture's sausage?
Yeah, I can't.
I don't even want to.
Everybody
eats
chicken around the world.
Yeah.
So like you could go in any flavor direction you wanted.
Agree.
Limitless.
So good.
Do a whole book on chicken and sausage.
We should at least do a feature in Bon Appetit on chicken
and sausage.
Pretty sure you can come up with 5 recipes.
And probably some pretty funny headlines.
Yeah.
Hi, I'm Lale Arakoglu, host of Women Who Travel. Each story from our guests and listeners is totally unique and utterly personal. We love hearing about your first impressions when visiting someplace new.
My first trip to the Patagonia region was on the Argentine side. I couldn't believe the expansive territory. It's like being in Tibet. The emptiness and the harshness really, I found transformative.
Or a story told when safely back on dry land.
You know, things happened every single day. I ran out of gas on a jet ski in the middle of the ocean. And I was like, what if a sea creature comes to eat me? But then I'm delusional. I was like, I'll make friends with it and it won't eat me. And maybe I'll ride that back to shore.
That's how it works.
Yeah.
Join me, Lale Arakoglu, every week for more adventures on Women Who Travel, wherever you listen to your podcasts.
We are now going to take questions.
Brats and birds.
From our callers. Brats and birds. There's your head. Okay. Yeah. From, if I'm mispronouncing your name, listeners, I apologize. But Deandra Parker, growing fruit. What's up with that? Why is it a good idea?
Who said it was a good
idea? And do we only grill stone fruit? Are we just gilding the grilling lily for aesthetics? Good question, Deandra. Do you grow fruit, Carla? I think it's sort of something we put in the magazine, but do any of us actually do it?
It looks good.
I just think it's just total bullshit. Sorry.
No, go
I'm saying it looks good on the pages of the magazine.
Yeah.
Why?
The grill marks on the peach?
Okay, the one time it was good.
You guys have definitely had that.
Was a grilled peach that I didn't make. I never I've never grilled a fruit.
I think grilled pineapple is, in theory, interesting because it's such a high sugar content. It gets caramelized. But you know what else I don't want? Like, after I've eaten an entirely grilled meal, I don't need grilled dessert.
I think it's bullshit.
You know what I mean?
I also just don't want hot fruit unless it's in a pie. Give me a grilled pie. No.
Savory fruit, though. We just touched on savory fruit at the beginning of this pod.
It's true.
That is something that I've not mastered that I think is totally not bullshit.
Right.
I'm going to make that melon salad, and we're going to win, and we're not going to grill a thing.
No. Right. And okay. and hot grilled melon is, like, really bad news.
Yeah.
Although the grilled pineapple, we did a really cool Cook Like a Pro, the whole grilled pineapple. Yeah. Remember that?
Yeah.
That was pretty cool. And then made, like, a spicy salsa with it, but then you cooled it back down again.
But I will say this, if you have a lot of grilled meats and if you have grilled veg also, it's nice to just have some fresh ripe fruit after, like your melon.
I mean, even grilling a tomato seems wrong.
Next one. Ugh, this one, I have a lot to think about and say about this subject. From Brian Sperling. Metal or wooden skewers? How tight, parens, or loose should it be kebabbed? How do you even spell kebab? On the grates or over foil? Any tips for fish since it's so good on the grill but likes to fall apart? Everyone knows to double skewer veggies so they don't spin, right? Basting as you go.
No, I didn't know that.
Now Brian's just showing up. That's the best way to do it. You double skewer them so then nothing, like with shrimp or whatever, so they don't spin around. Best way to temp test meats and veggies on the same skewer? Never. What, if anything, can't I kebab? What should I kebab that I've never even thought to kebab?
Oh,
Carla, go.
This is like...
Definitely not metal. Can I chime in here?
Yeah, please.
Not metal.
Oh, I love metal.
Flat metal skewers? No. They can be great, and they don't burn and fall apart.
And not loose. Tight. Always tight. Well, tight.
Yeah, that's what keeps it juicy. But if you go to any good, like, Middle Eastern sort of joint, it's the flat skewers.
So yeah.
They're making swords. Yeah.
And they're when you make ground meat for a kebab, you pack it, but not too tight. Right? Because it's expanding. It's doing the same thing that a burger would do.
I'm thinking like a yakitori situation where the meats are very compressed.
Yeah. Right.
Yes. Well, so we did a big skewer story a few years ago, and that's sort of one obvious realization that whether you're in the Middle East, whether you're in Japan, this notion of like proteins going in the skewer, vegetables going in another one. But like whether you're doing lamb or pieces of chicken or pieces of beef, marinate them, glaze them, whatever, pack them all tight on a skewer.
Where did that awful tradition of the American kebab with like the piece of the chicken cube or the steak cube with just like a piece of green bell pepper.
and three petals of red onion.
Who's doing
and then
mushroom. Don't forget the really dried out mushroom.
Who is doing that?
I still see those at some markets.
They just pre-package them.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, so, it's the worst.
So that notion of like, hey, put a bunch of boneless chicken thigh or lamb meat or whatever, season it really well, maybe marinate it, and then you can grill that exactly to the temperature you want, get it really crispy over high heat, glaze it as they do a yakitori style.
Yeah, but you said packing it really tightly together. I like to leave a little breathing room in between my pieces of protein so they get crispy on all sides.
But then you might overcook them.
I think that you can preserve juiciness by packing them in close together.
I also learned about the accordion fold. I got really into that.
Into that.
Big time.
And there's the one recipe, pulled too, but the coconut marinated short rib kebabs.
So good.
I think they're from 2 or 3 years ago. Total thin cut short ribs, so really fatty, very beefy, and then over under with a delicious chili oil, crushed peanut dipping sauce and a coconut marinade. Great.
What?
You just look at the picture, you're going to want them.
Yum.
And then the scallops, I think when he said the double skewer, it really made me think about the scallops on the cover of our June issue where the scallops are skewered, large, not bay scallops, but regular sea scallops with two skewers going through each of them so that when you turn them over, they don't spin around. And that had like a simple little mayonnaise with nori, some lime.
Yep.
Really good.
Our friend Sam, different Sam, in Mass every year, this is like the ultimate skewer for me, is Sam, who every year when we go to Gillette for a New England Patriots game, a bunch of bros will get together and make one pilgrimage to Gillette and do the full Monty tailgate. And this guy, he's from Sierra Leone, and he makes this he does chicken and beef skewers with the same crazy spicy peanut marinade, so spicy it'll blow the back of your head off. And when it's freezing cold and you're chugging beer and like tossing a football around to stay warm and you're about to watch the Patriots beat whoever, and you're getting kind of tanked. When he pulls those crazy, spicy, peanutty, I've never tasted this kind of incredible fragrant off of the skewer. Oh my God. And too good.
Does he grill them in advance, or you're grilling?
No, we grill
them
on a tiny hibachi, right.
Which is hard to do in the cold.
Yeah, this guy is a warrior. He's a warrior.
All right, we need his recipe too. Calling in a lot of recipes.
Yep. Skewers, yes, of course, and of course our sambal chicken skewers, one of the all-time great VA recipes.
One of your definite favorites.
I do it all the time.
And you love that grilled. There's a grilled bacon too.
I did grill bacon, and I did some video with it a few years back. It was part of this, I guess, the skewer article, but buying really thick cut bacon like you get at Peter Luger's or something and doing that same threaded ribbon
right.
on the skewer and then doing that over like medium heat because you will get flare-ups, obviously.
Flare-ups
but
galore.
It gets super crispy, juicy on the inside, and you glaze it as you cook it. And then you kind of hit it with some little slivered scallions.
Talking
so
about
good.
Flare-ups, when getting back to that pork jowl,
yeah.
I was not prepared for the kind of flare-ups that were going to happen. I didn't have the right tools. I singed every hair on my body. I didn't have the right tools. All of a sudden, there was like a molten volcano coming out of this Weber. And people were like, do we need to call someone? And I'm just attacking it with like a tiny pair of kitchen tongs.
Unbelievable.
And I'm like,
did you have a cold zone? Do you have a safety zone?
I had no cold zone in sight.
Okay, Carla, non-grilling question.
Yeah.
From our friend Elizabeth Kowalski. How do I keep my leafy greens fresher longer? I love a good summer salad, but my spinach, you should never put spinach in a salad, parens and arugula and lettuce become wilted way too quickly. I can relate to that. I hate seeing my delicious spinach of yesterday become a limp mess overnight. What should I be doing?
Okay, first of all, I hope that we're not talking about baby spinach because there's not a whole lot. Baby spinach has
Let's
like,
just not talk about spinach.
But she mentioned spinach twice.
Mature
spinach might be like, if that yeah. might be part of the problem.
Spinach is not
Go
a
Go with mature spinach.
That's not a salad.
Okay.
Grain.
Salad needs to be submerged in very cold water. So if you don't have a salad spinner, get online and get one now. We like the Xylus one that has the pulley top. Yeah. It's great. I just graduated from my pushy up and downy button one to the Xylus, and I'm good with it. I'm okay with it. It was a big decision. Submerge in that bowl, very cold water. If the leaves are already a little wilty because maybe you brought them back from the farmer's market and they already had some time in the warmness, and you're like, ugh, I'm already a little concerned, throw a few ice cubes.
Yes, I've done that.
In that water, Love really it. Cold. They have to be drained. They have to be very dry. So a lot of spinning, draining the water out, spinning again until there's no water left. And then I like to put them in a vegetable bag. A Ziploc bag is also great. Like if you have a, you know, big gallon size
What's
bag.
A, what is
What's a vegetable bag?
Like the kind when you're at the grocery store and the kind you tear off of the roll.
Oh,
like
okay.
vegetable, keep those, you know, you can reuse them, turn
yeah,
them inside out.
Yeah, because I feel like those are very bad for the earth.
Yeah, single-use plastic Wait. Is bad.
Yeah.
But,
so what do you do with the vegetable bag? Then
well,
what?
Then I have my clean, dried lettuce and I put it back in the bag, press out the air. If I feel like there's any moisture, sometimes I'll put one half sheet of paper
yes.
towel. Just to absorb.
Ooh.
Yeah. And then it has to go in the crisper drawer. The really best thing that you can do, actually.
Does the crisper drawer crisp?
It's more
I feel
like
it's just
crisp...
a drawer. I mean, what
like
does it do? It's not a different temperature
preventer.
In there.
Uh-huh. It has less, I don't know, it's more hermetic. It's like not hanging out with all the other stuff.
Okay.
Maybe less fluctuation because when you open the fridge door, it's still in its thing. But the really best thing, and the salad spinners are designed to be storage units. So if you have the real estate in your fridge, or maybe you have a two-fridge household, put the dry lettuces back into the salad spinner, put the lid on it, and that is really the best way that you can store clean, dry lettuce.
Fascinating.
Also, no more baby arugula, no more baby spinach.
Yep.
You know,
I kind of like baby arugula.
But pick a green with integrity. Otherwise, it's got nothing to give you.
Can I ask you a question? And I know I'm not supposed to use in the resealable plastic bags, bad for the environment. But if you reuse them enough, then okay, that's good at least.
There are also some you can buy that like are meant to be used thousands of times.
But I always thought it's a good thing when you wash, dry thoroughly, put them in there, and then press all the air out and seal them so they're almost like vacuum sealed. I think that works pretty well.
That works well. I don't like to crush my lettuces.
That's true. Okay, what are good.
Was that a response to a question?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh. That was a real live question.
All right. I want you to both answer this one. Gabe, I'm going to start with you because you're like healthy Gabe these days.
Oh, yeah. I'm trying.
What are good non-alcoholic summer drinks that aren't plain lemonade? Asked Kasia Thomas. I think Kasia.
Well, first of all, I wouldn't have too much lemonade because there's a ton of sugar in lemonade. I wouldn't even go that direction. First of all, we have, it's your friend. You know it. You love it. It's Pamplemousse LaCroix.
Oh.
Go to it. Frequent, early and often. That's what I do. We go through about a case a day in my house.
You know what I like? Also, those little mini, very slim Perrier cans with the watermelon flavor.
No. Yeah, I do love like a slim can. Yeah, stop. I don't know what
it's,
it is.
It's kind of like the Virginia Slims of carbonated water.
But it's only 8 ounces.
Summer, you know.
Yeah, it's no. How are you going to put that in a koozie? How are you going to put the slim Perrier can in a koozie? It's not happening.
We need like a very like tapered silhouette koozie.
No, we don't.
Some fashion Prada will make them.
You know what I liked? You know what I really like? Not for NA Bev. When you feel like you want to have a Bev, it's the good old fashioned bitters and soda with a healthy squeeze of lime
Buffs
or lemon.
And bits.
I love it.
Simone Schubach.
I love it. I'm trying to do that a lot on the weeknights now when I'm trying to cut down on my consumption a little bit.
Right.
And that'll get me through. That gets me through the night.
Is Sunday a weeknight?
Oh yes.
Yes.
That's
bad news. That's what I need the most.
But Friday is not.
Can I have
right.
You know what I do? Well, I'm not on Gabe's sort of thing, but I a lot of times on the nights where I'm trying not to have a drink like last night, I'll do the kombucha on ice like in a cocktail glass.
Oh, yeah, that's nice.
Because
it's
cool.
Fizzy, it kinda tastes like natural wine.
It is a little alcoholic.
A smidge.
And a lot of sugar.
Yeah. So I don't do too much. But I would rather drink on Sunday day afternoon and not drink then take that I'm off on Monday or Tuesday or whatever. You know what I mean? Like I gotta get through Sunday.
Same.
We had a couple of brews on the beach Sunday.
Yeah, not
we
night
cut,
drinking.
We cut it off early, like around 4.
Exactly.
And we were good to go.
I abstained this Sunday, but whew, it's hard.
I would also say I do love like a little bit of lemonade and then a lot of club soda on ice.
For people that don't know the bitters and soda situation, it's what's the main brand of bitters? That
Peychaud,
everyone used.
Angostura.
That one?
Angostura, right?
Yeah.
Angostura. Angostura. That's readily available. Actually, less so now. It's hard to find in supermarkets,
really?
Weirdly enough. Yeah. I was like running around trying to look for it. Amazon.com also has it. But that, like, a couple of dashes, 3 or 4 dashes in a large glass. Fill it up with soda
also,
and lots of ice and a healthy squeeze of lime. That is a delicious NA sort of cocktail-y vibe.
Also, if you're out with other
bitters,
if you're with other people, like at a bar, you can order a Bubs and Bits and it looks like you're drinking a drink. So you don't get all that attention.
Is that what they call
of
it,
like
Bubs and Bits?
That's what I call
people
it.
People are like, dude,
Bubs
why aren't you drinking?
Yeah, then
I'm
people are like,
why aren't you drinking?
Why aren't you drinking tonight? And then
I'm
you
never
have to like
Bubs
explain.
And Bits, ever.
You just said it twice.
I'm never saying it again.
Carla, Will Derek wants to know. First of all, Will Derek wants us to know that he's been making a lot of ice cream this summer, which
capital
has been,
S
which
summer,
which,
by
which,
the way,
which has been good to share. But what can I do to take my homemade ice cream to the next level?
When he says, which has been good to share, do you think he means share with others or a fact that he's sharing with us?
He's share with others.
Okay.
Are you an ice cream person, homemade ice cream person?
I love ice cream. I don't have an ice cream maker. Mm-hmm. It takes up a lot of room. And if you're going to give that kind of real estate, unless you're really into making ice cream, it's just I don't have that kind of kitchen.
Yeah.
I love fresh mint in an ice cream if you're making homemade ice cream and you sort of...
Oh.
Yeah.
And like a vanilla?
Yeah. Like sort of mintifying your vanilla. I also love when people sort of stracciatella eyes. They drizzle the hot chocolate into the maker.
I feel like you should have fielded this question.
Well, I don't have an ice cream maker either. I've just been around people who have had it, who've had ones before.
I don't know if I can answer this one. You have to find a good recipe that has a great base. And then I feel like you can do anything you want. I don't like the feeling of... I would say fresh fruit.
Well, I think...
But I don't like the feeling of the hard fruit in the ice cream.
I think a trick that you can do to take it to the next level that's very easy is salt.
Right.
Sea salt.
Interesting.
Like Malden, really nice sea salt will work great with vanilla. It'll work great with any kind of like salted caramel situation, any kind of peanut or chocolate vibe. I think if you're looking for a simple trick to wow guests with your homemade ice cream, sea salt.
Great answer.
Yeah. Or making your own homemade caramel sauce or chocolate sauce.
Sure.
Wait, why do you have that chocolate sauce recipe there?
Well, I thought we were going to do a thing about the thing we haven't made yet.
Oh, well, no, well, they were already there. Why don't you bring it up now?
Is that a new issue?
No, this is old.
This is June 2016, and the recipe is BA's Best Hot Fudge. And see, I feel like making your own hot fudge is a great trick for when you're buying ice cream, which I really do recommend buying ice cream.
So store-bought ice cream.
Store-bought ice cream, make your own hot fudge. But if you, look, Derek's already like all over this homemade, Will Derek is all over this homemade ice cream situation. If he wants to take it to the next level, make your own hot fudge.
So then you can
stracciatella that, or you can put it on top after. It's pretty simple. You make a mixture of heavy cream, brown sugar, and agave. Claire used agave in this recipe. It's key. Some recipes will say to use corn syrup, agave, honey. They're all liquid states of sugar, which encourages the sugar to like get liquid as opposed to being crystallized. And that's how you get that like very glossy.
Get liquid, baby.
Yeah, exactly. So then you boil that until it hits 220, which is not quite softball stage, but is still a temperature where the sugar changes and you throw off enough liquid that it's going to be stretchy and chewy at room temperature instead of
because that's
just the texture of
wait,
cream.
What are we talking about?
Hot fudge. Making hot fudge.
Sorry. Well, I remember.
I lost track.
And then you add chocolate to it. And then that makes the chocolate part.
Because I remember as a kid, when I had actual hot fudge, I was like, holy shit, this is the best thing ever.
Yeah.
And unlike what my mom would typically buy in the 1970s, were the cans of Hershey syrup. They came like in basically like a Campbell's tomato soup can.
Yeah.
And you take the little, like the opener and the top. And
then they made it in the squeeze bottles.
But it was always really thin and too bitter.
So that's the difference between like making chocolate sauce and making hot fudge.
Yeah, and hot fudge.
Cooking the sugar.
Exactly.
So you could make like a ganache basically and pour that over ice cream, but it's not going to do the same textural thing with the temperatures and stuff.
Can I ask a question regarding textures and temperatures?
Sure.
What was the thing that used to instantly harden into a hard candy shell?
Magic shell.
Yeah, magic shell.
And that's melted chocolate with coconut oil. That's all it is. If you search magic shell online, it's like you melt chocolate in the microwave and add a certain amount of coconut oil.
Something happens. Magic.
When it hits the cold, it makes that shell. But it runs very thin. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And like, That
was
thin
good.
Little,
Magic
yeah.
Shell was incredible. That's
Magic
a good one.
Shell's cool.
Yeah. You can find, so it's BA's Best Hot Fudge, and you can make, it says you can make it 2 weeks ahead, cover and chill, reheat gently. This photo is amazing. It looks like some
photo's incredible.
It's like a Cars or Duran Duran album cover with like red nail polish and a cherry dripping.
Turquoise,
and
really good, blue.
Suggestive.
Stephen Lewis shot it. But yeah, this is a keeper, this recipe.
I love this photo so much. This is one of my favorite spreads we ever did. I love the recipe. I love hot fudge. I have never made this. So this is the summer. I feel like I say that a lot.
I guarantee when we get back, you're not making that. I guarantee. I will have made the melon thing, but you will not have made that.
Okay, maybe. It's like every February I say I'm going to learn how to do sourdough bread, and every February I'm like, no, I'm not.
You know
this month is too short.
You know what you do, though? You email
It's like saying
this.
You're going to make cassoulet.
Yeah.
I'm not making it.
I did that.
I know you did.
Yes,
we talked about it.
But you email this to your friend who loves to make dessert.
Right.
And then they can bring it to your house in a little mason jar.
Yeah, my
there
friend Will Derek.
Yeah, Will Derek.
For
check
example.
Will's getting a lot of run on this pod. Okay, BA's Best Hot Fudge. Gabe, we'll see you in a couple weeks Sam's Grill. Yeah, we got to get going, man. Gabe, Carl, thanks for this midsummer pod.
Always fun.
It was fun.
See you guys.
The Bon Appetit Foodcast is produced by Carrie Polis and Christina Che and produced and edited by Emma Wortsman. Our theme music is by Nathaniel Wortsman. We have new episodes every Wednesday, and if you want to tell us about this or any other episode, email us at bonappetitfoodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.
Hi, I'm Lale Arakoglu, host of Women Who Travel. Each story from our guests and listeners is totally unique and utterly personal. We love hearing about your first impressions when visiting someplace new.
My first trip to the Patagonia region was on the Argentine side. I couldn't believe the expansive territory. It
It's like being in Tibet. The emptiness and the harshness really, I found transformative.
Or a story told when safely back on dry land.
You know, things happened every single day. I ran out of gas on a jet ski in the middle of the ocean. And I was like, what if a sea creature comes to eat me? But then I'm delusional. I was like, I'll make friends with it and it won't eat me. And maybe I'll ride that back to shore.
That's how it works.
Yeah.
Join me, Lale Arakoglu, every week for more adventures on Women Who Travel, wherever you listen to your podcasts.